Senate Committee on Transportation Policy will come to order. We are being broadcast today, so if this room gets crowded or warm or need a break, please take your conversations outside, and there are television monitors throughout the building that you can also see it on. Today we're going to take up two bills, and we have Senator Murphy to present. So Senate File 1276, Senator Murphy.
I think he's doing
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, first I'd like to acknowledge all of our partners that have come here today, and this is the operating engineers, the 49ers as they're known, and that's most of the folks that are in this room. And they're the people that actually build roads in our state, and thank you. Thanks for all your work. And, you know, we also have a bunch of deputy registrars here today. And, you know, our deputy registrars are a very important piece of the puzzle, too, especially in greater Minnesota. So thanks to those folks for coming as well. Members, what we have in front of us today, we've got two pieces of work to do. One is Senate File 1511, and that is the economic recovery package. For the transportation portion for the state of Minnesota.
Senator Murphy, I announced Senate File 1276, so I believe you wanted to reverse that order and do 1511 first?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if possible, I'd like to do the stimulus bill first.
Thank you, sir. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and members, the stimulus bill is pretty straightforward, and it just gives MnDOT the authority to spend the revenue according to the parameters that were established in the Federal Register. But it basically just reaffirms that they have to spend the money according to the rules that are provided. We've got a couple of amendments to clean up some things that I believe have been maybe difficult to administer over the past year, and I think it's going to smooth out at least one of the processes. Thank you. And members, you know, we're pretty fortunate in the state of Minnesota on a couple different aspects. One is that the chair of the House committee is from Minnesota, Congressman Obestar, and that always helps. And we've got a strong contingent all across Minnesota of Congress men and women and U.S. senators that are very supportive of what we're doing in Minnesota with our transportation dollars. Senate File 1511 is going to give broad discretion and authority to the Commissioner of MnDOT to apply these funds according to many of the lists that we've seen that have floated around the Capitol. As a matter of fact, the Commissioner and his staff have already put some of this money out to the public and has, in greater Minnesota, has released some of this money for bid. And those projects are going to go ahead as soon as those bids are wrapped up and the contracts are awarded. A lot of people in this room are going to get back to work, and that's why they call it an economic recovery stimulus. Some folks would say that maybe we shouldn't be giving basically carte blanche to the department on the way that this revenue is being spent. I feel differently. I feel that the commissioner's staff are well situated. They've been preparing for this money for several months now. And like I said, they're well situated to make sure that every project that's shovel ready that is going to get a piece of this money is going to come to fruition before the end of summer. And, you know, I can't stress enough of the regard that I believe that the legislature has for a lot of the men and women that are working at MnDOT and making this happen. So with that, Mr. Chair, I've got two amendments, I believe, for this bill. And I'd like to first offer up the A2 amendment.
Senator Murphy, while it's being passed out, maybe you can just give us a real brief description of it.
Members, there was some question, about the economic recovery program in regards to transportation, knowing that there's other states out there that may not be able to expend all of their money, and so there was going to be this second round, theoretically, of money that may become available during the summer. What we don't want to do is to have a process, and right now we have what's called TCAG, and that's the process where, the leaders of both respective bodies, the chairs and the ranking minority members of that committee come together, have a meeting, and either approve the spending limit going up or disapprove. I think what we've found is that process may take a little too long in regards to the stimulus money. So what we want to do for this stimulus money is change that TCAG process so that once the commissioner submits to the Transportation Contingent Appropriations Group, TCAG, written notice that they need to move that authority up, then we would have 10 days to respond. And instead of having a committee meeting, we could have a committee meeting with TCAG, or we could all sign documentation stating that we either approve or disapprove. It would expedite the system. We still get the same information back. We still pass it along to our colleagues on the Transportation Committee and also in the rest of the legislature. All this does is it just kind of smooths it out a little bit, makes it a little quicker, because the one thing that we know for sure, that the federal government, they want this money in the hands of the workers as soon as possible. And even a 2 or 4 or 10 day slowdown might jeopardize some of the money, so we want to make sure that it's going to go smooth. Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion on the A2 amendment.
Senator Murphy offers the A2 amendment. Is there any discussion or questions from the members? Seeing none, Senator Murphy renews his motion for the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, I also have the A1 amendment. And members, the A1 amendment, and if anybody from MnDOT wants to comment on this, I've got no problem with it, because I believe that that the majority of what is in this amendment is common and new practice, or I should say revitalized practice at the department. And basically, this only applies to the federal economic recovery funds, but it's in regard to the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. And it just restates what MnDOT is already doing and what the federal government already requires us to do in regards to disadvantaged businesses. The bottom part asks that MnDOT report February 1st about the practices in regards to the economic recovery money in regards to DBEs. And it asks this until those funds are expired. So once the funds go away, they don't have to report this anymore. But it's useful information that we'll be able to use in the future and going forward with our regular road program. So, Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion on the A1 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 1511. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. That's the two amendments for 1511 that I had. Members, the idea here is to kind of roll these two bills out today, put them on the table. People can look at them over the weekend and talk with Ms. Berzoski and Ms. Boyd about possible amendments for the committee hearing on Tuesday. And that's the day we'll go ahead and mark up the rest of the bills, take the rest of the amendments, and move them along. So, Mr. Chair, I would put 1511 as amended on the table.
Senator Murphy moves Senate File 151 to be laid on the 1511 to be laid on the table. Senator Murphy, was that a motion, or were you suggesting we lay it on the table?
Mr. Chairman, that was that's my motion.
That's your motion. Senate File 1511, as amended, be laid on the table. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. It is laid on the table. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, next we have Senate File 1276, and there is an author's delete all amendment for this bill. I believe that everybody already has it. And, Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of the A1 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 1276. Is there any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is the MnDOT's or Transportation's funding bill. as you can see, the front page, most of the pages with numbers on it are kind of boilerplate. But it goes through all the funds, talks about how much money is in each one of the funds. Some of these numbers have changed over recent weeks and months according to the revenues that have been coming in, and this just reflects what we have currently to work with today. I know that, once again, these numbers, by the time this bill gets ready for action on the Senate floor, the numbers will probably have changed again. And so we may have a floor amendment just to make sure that all the numbers work right. But from what we know now, these are the projections that we have to deal with. And so that's Section 1. Section 2 is more boilerplate language. So is Section 3. We keep going down through Section 3, and it talks about the different funds and what they're supposed to be used for, the Airport Development Assistance Fund, Aviation Support Services, Transit, Freight Lines, the State Roads account. There on page 5, you can see what our debt service is currently. There's more county state aids and municipal state aids also on page 5. The appropriations on state road construction begin over on page 7. The department's support numbers are on page 6. There's also a chapter in here about, the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. I believe that that language may have been dropped out of the governor's recommendations. I don't believe that was part of the governor's recommendations, but that's been boilerplate language for as long as I can remember. So we put that back in the bill. There's the money for public safety starts on page 9. And as you can see that, you'll see a difference in these numbers from one year to the next, and that just reflects where the budget is right now. There's the appropriation for capital security. Once again, there was some language that may have been accidentally left out here, but this is the language that's in the bill on page 12. Has been boilerplate language. Basically, this language was worked up several years back when Senator Arata was still a member of the committee, and we were trying to clean up the state trunk highway fund to make sure that our gas tax goes for road activities and not other things like capital security, unfortunately. Vehicle services, driver services are on that page, and also the traffic safety account, pipeline safety. It's also a contingent account, and then also the tort claims. Once again, that's a number that kind of carries from one year to the next. Let's see if there's any other important language in that first article. Not that I can think of. Article 2, we're going to authorize the department to use $21.5 million in trunk highway bonds. We found out with all the requests that came in on the account that we built in last year's 152 bill that interchange accounts to help drive business activity, the request for that hit an all-time high. And so we want to put some more money back in that account, try to, you know, so that MnDOT can incentivize businesses that want to become partners. You know, we can build access for these businesses and help create jobs. A portion of that money is also dedicated for, we heard some testimony on some projects in District 6 in regards to bridges and culverts, and so we just authorized a little bit of money, $1.5 million, to maybe help District 2 resolve some of their issues in that category. Subdivision 2 there is standard bond sale language with the number 21.5 in there. Article 3 is the finance portion of it. This also, and members, this might cause a little difficulty for some members, but in Section 1, we had a report that showed that there was money from the Trunk Highway Fund being used to pay personnel in the governor's office, and we want to make sure that that practice doesn't happen, and that's why that line is in there on 1522 and 1523. Now, we've tried to keep the State Trunk Highway Fund as pure as possible, and I don't think having that revenue going that way does that. Section 2 is it's that administrative cost, and I believe that this was a request from the department that they wanted to move that from 1.2% to 1.5% to 2%. The next section, Section 3, Subdivision 5, and maybe Ms. Berzoski can help me if I blunder this, but this is how we're backfilling. No. Okay, well, then I'll stop right away and let Ms. Berzoski explain that one.
We have a question from Senator Kielash.
We don't.
Okay, Ms. Berzoski.
Mr. Chair and members, Sections 3 to 7 are all part of a department initiative that just corrects the credit of certain fees, and it deposits them into the vehicle services operation account, which is where they have been going since 05, and just through oversight, that language had never been cleaned up. So it's just technical cleanup in Sections 3 through 7.
Thank you, Ms. Berzoski, Mr. Chair. I knew that I'd get through here and probably blow a piece of this, so. Okay, and Section 8 is the primary enforcement of seat belts. That is Section 9, 10. And then there's a couple other places in the bill that refers to it, Section 11, 12. And I think there might be another section in the back, but that's the primary enforcement of seatbelts. Members, I think this committee has been pretty strong in their support of making sure that the primary enforcement of seatbelt is a thing that happens. I know that it's a leading cause of workplace death, and we got to get a handle on this. There's too many people that die on our roads every year needlessly, and hospital costs of unbelted drivers is astronomical. And in this day and time, we just can't afford to continue to do it. Not only is the loss of life a tragic event for families, but the overall crushing burden of hospital costs and ambulance costs and accident reconstruction is a crushing, crushing blow. And we need to rectify that as soon as possible. We haven't had much luck in the House, but if we put it in this bill, maybe they will see that we're serious. Nobody wants to jeopardize the funding of our state roads for any issue unless it means that we're going to save lives. And this one saves lives.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson, question.
Chairman, Senator Murphy, don't we have the highest, a higher participation rate in wearing of seatbelts than states that do have primary seatbelts?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, that's correct in some cases and not in others. There are other states that have a higher compliance rate than we do, and they have a primary law. And there's some that have a primary law and have a lower compliance rate. Our educational program that is put on through the Department of Public Safety and the Safety Council is probably one of the best any place in the United States, but we're having a hard time reaching that last 10 to 15% of people who choose not to buckle up. Once again, it costs about $1.1 million every time someone dies on Minnesota roads, and that's the cost that's borne by everyone through higher insurance costs and the higher cost to deliver things like ambulance services and hospital stays and things like that. I understand what you're saying, Senator Olson. The other reason why I'm insistent upon the primary enforcement of seatbelt is a lot of times the people that we are losing on our roads are younger drivers. And they know that they can't get pulled over if they don't have their seatbelt on. You know, these kids are pretty smart. They know that from driver training courses. And, you know, teen drivers only represent about 6% of all the drivers on the road, but they represent 12% of all the fatalities on our roads. And that's just disproportionately high. Young white men and young African-American males are also disproportionately high. And in the study groups that have researched both of those categories, one thing became abundantly clear, that if they're told by law that they have to buckle up, the chances that they buckle up goes up exponentially.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I hope that it would also change the driving.
Senator Olson, get real close to your mic because you're having trouble hearing us.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, I would hope that if that changes, that it would also change the behavior that causes the accident, because I don't think not wearing a seatbelt actually causes the accident. That's part of the problem.
Right. And, Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, you bring up a good point. A lot of the, most studies indicate that about 70% of all the accidents that happen on our roads is because we make a bad decision behind the wheel. And our younger drivers, who are not as experienced as many of the folks in this room, they tend to make those mistakes even worse because their reaction time is lickety-split, where ours is maybe a little slower. And sometimes overcorrecting on roads that may be icy or wet is something, it's more likely that a younger driver is going to try to overcorrect or break themselves out of a problem, where experienced drivers know that, nice and steady, you'll win the race. And, our experience has lent us to, has given us the experience to avoid some situations that younger drivers get into. But you're correct. It is their behavior that drives the vast majority of their serious crashes.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and Senator Murphy. And Senator Olson, I don't know if you were here the other day when we had traffic safety people actually talk about those statistics, but that was one of the things, and perhaps we could get those in writing and how it qualifies, because I was surprised to find out that compliance number is only for people in the front seat. And so if we understood the statistics, and then it changes drastically by different age groups, and then whether it's metro or outstate, so it's interesting, and I didn't know if Senator Murphy, if we could, you know, talk to the traffic safety people and get those breakdowns, because I think it really opened my eyes as to the general statistics and things. And, you know, members, when we're talking about this issue, I have a little bit of a hard time because, you know, I have some libertarian tendencies. And yet when we in general pick up the health care costs, I think it becomes incumbent on us, since the driver's license is a privilege, not a right, to start thinking in terms of how we enforce and some of the issues that we do put into our traffic safety things. And my wife got to be the unfortunate witness to several accidents in the last couple of days, and it is, Senator Olson, very much that, and I don't know what we can attribute it to, but people are driving differently. They're just not stopping for stoplights, stop signs. Things are going on out there that we probably need to understand, and again, gets back to our traffic safety statistics, might help us understand where we might be able to shift some directions there.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Jungbauer, thanks for that.
Senator
and
Murphy, could you pull your mic up a little bit more? Thanks.
And Senator Jungbauer and members, the folks at the Safety Council put together a new packet in regards to primary seatbelt, and they have a lot of the statistics that you spoke of, and I'll make sure that everybody on the committee gets a packet. I think it's knowledge is key, and a lot of what people do in public safety and MnDOT, folks think that, all they do is pour concrete and plow our roads and this, that, and the other, and they don't understand the reason why we collect so much data, statistical data, not only in crash facts, but road pavement life and, just the myriad of things that we study. And it's because we want to build the roads better and safer. And I really feel that primary seatbelt is a good wake-up call, especially to a few of those categories that we talked about earlier. And it's information that we can all use, and we can all use it in our own private lives. I mean, I think it convinced my oldest son to buckle up from time to time. So, but members, going on through the bill, the next section is Section 13, and that just says that the commissioner may utilize the design-build method of contracting, the design-build best value contracting method for high-speed passenger rail. Let's see. That's all this. And then, members, there's also in regards to trying to backfill some of the losses to the transit portion of the budget, Section 18, which could be construed as being controversial as well.
Yes.
Well, Senator Jungbauer, at least I'm pointing it out.
No, I caught it, Senator Murphy. It's marked up.
Okay. But Section 18 is the expansion of the Metropolitan Taxing District in regards to their transit taxing authority. Currently, that taxing authority doesn't encapsulate the whole seven-county metropolitan area. And members, by using this expansion of that taxing district to encapsulate the metropolitan area, which should have been the taxing district to begin with, we're able to backfill some of that money, and those cuts to the transit operations in the metropolitan area would be not negated but mitigated somewhat.
Senator Murphy,
yes.
We have a question. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I think it once was the entire district, and then they decided to be fair and take out those areas that aren't served by transit so that they don't have to bear that burden on the property tax.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, in regard to that, I understand the, your remarks, but I would disagree on the point of whether or not we need to do this and whether or not transit services reach, every nook and cranny in the 7-county metropolitan area. We know that currently we have some areas that are underserved. But if we continue to have to cut tens of millions of dollars out of the Metropolitan Council's budget in regards to transit, there's going to be many, many more areas that become underserved. Currently, in the 7-county metropolitan area, there are pockets where the taxing district does not envelop. There are those pockets where it is not applied, and yet those folks use a lot of our park and ride assets, and and they use some of the bus lines that provide service in that kind of intermediate area just outside the 7-county metropolitan area, just inside, and they move folks towards the downtown areas. I can understand why someone in Lakeville may not, or in some of the other outlying areas may not feel that this is warranted, but when you look at the amount of congestion on our roads and people want another option, a park and ride lot, whether you're either getting in the car with four or five other people or getting on a bus or hopefully someday, like in that South West Corridor, there may be a high-speed bus or a rail line to get on. If they choose to do that, it frees up that spot on the freeway for somebody else. And I just can't stress enough about the limitations currently on our park and ride system. I mean, if you go around the park and rides, almost any place in the metropolitan area, any day of the week, maybe not Saturday or Sunday, any day of the working week, I should say, those park and rides are full. There's people parking half a mile away from a park and ride so that they can get on a bus or some other option, get in a van with a van pool. So I think it's incumbent upon everybody in the metropolitan area to help fund this. Like I say, if we don't do this, there's going to be a lot of areas that are going to go underserved or unserved.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Murphy. And, we agree on so many things, and this is one of those that just doesn't cut the mustard. If you're from my district, we can't get transit up there. I mean, you have to go through several other areas that are totally not served in order to get there. We will have the North Star. And yet we're in that extra sales tax district to kind of cover some of those operating costs. So Met Council was pretty clear, and I think it's a great discussion. If you can get some lines up there or get a line up there, then we should have that discussion. But in the absence of that, it gets to be that point again where you're taxed without any benefit to that tax. And I think that's about the open and honesty and the visibility of things is a lot of people don't mind paying a tax if they know what it's going for and they actually see it going there. It's when that tax gets diverted or they get no service and their money's going to service somebody else, then it causes a whole lot of heartburn.
Senator Murphy, any response?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I Senator Jungbauer is not wrong there. I mean, people do get a little excited if they don't see a benefit on the taxes that they pay. But, Senator Jungbauer, my only rebuttal would be that if we continue to shrink service, it's never going to get out in your neck of the woods. Right now we're fighting a battle to maintain and improve in some areas where we're at. And I think that your long-term vision matches what the long-term vision is for transit for a lot of people around this table. We all have been working towards making sure that it was available to everyone. But if we continue to shrink it, you know, that long-term vision becomes even a longer-term vision.
Well, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I could give the very same speech that Senator Jungbauer just gave, but from my perspective, my taxpayers are putting forth a lot of effort, and your taxpayers are benefiting from that because they're driving right up to the edge of the transit taxing district, parking in the park-and-ride lot, hopping on the bus, and they don't pay a nickel for any of that capital effort at all, or frankly, any of the operating effort either, other than what they pay for in the fare. And also, the paratransit service that is paid for with those capital dollars that are levied on a subset actually go outside of the district and go, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Absolutely, they do. And go pick up folks and serve folks. So those are, you know, so like you said, if you're paying for something other people who aren't paying for it are benefiting from that, that's the equity issue that gets raised.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble. And I mean, this is a great discussion, and we need to get into the details of it because I do share that long-range vision. But we do have our own park and rides in my district as well. And so, you know, maybe some people are sneaking down to your park and rides, and maybe some of those people are getting on transit. But it's something that I don't believe you just put in a bill like this. But I think, you know, and we've had the start of the discussion, but I think this needs to be fully vetted of how do we do it. And I think it should have some sort of a phase in if we go there. There's some things happening up in East Bethel that when a new wastewater plant goes in there, we'll have a pretty good increase in density and things that will probably make it viable for that transit. So I can see this meeting the vision, but it's the wrong thing to talk about in this economy. Doesn't belong in this bill, I don't think, Senator Murphy. It's just one of those things that has to be figured out on its own and have a very lengthy discussion. And what are the cost benefits? And if the system isn't even coming close to paying for itself today and what we have, so we're going to take more money to pay for that, that still kind of predicates that it'll never go out further because it's going to take more and more money to keep going what's here today. So we really have to figure out efficiencies. There's a lot of structural points there that, again, most of us here agree that it needs to be figured out, but it's just not, you know, the point is that it doesn't belong here because it doesn't get the right amount of time and effort to figure out how to phase it in instead of just blanketing it, saying, well, you're not going to get nothing now, but some of you are using it and some of you aren't, and it's just not, I don't buy it.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I agree with your last statement, Senator Jungbauer. We have to maybe look at a bigger picture here on how we construct this and we go forward. We should have a larger hearing on it. But we absolutely need to have this expanded. As we heard from the Met Council the other day, we cannot go case by case by case to try to see which community is going to enter and negotiate case by case on what they're going to get to enter into the, and then the next community is going to say, well, they got this, I want a little bit more, and that's a wrong road to go down. And we need to be able to look at the bigger picture here and the vision. And in my community, most definitely the community of the South was benefiting greatly from transit, you know, in my area, even though they weren't contributing to the transit taxing district. They are now, but only through a negotiation on their individual city. And so we need to look at this, and it needs to be done. This thing has not gone away. I know I carried this last year, and I think it has been carried perennially for the last several years. It's about time that we address this and make it right. Maybe there's some other ways of doing besides just geographical boundaries. Maybe it's on a density of population or trends or something like that, but we definitely need to address this one soon.
Mr. Chairman?
And Mr.
Senator Fischbach.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask a question about another page, so if folks are done with this issue.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman,
we had Bonoff and Olson. Senator Bonoff, did you? Okay. Senator Olson.
And Mr. Chairman, and when you do, I think you should get away from the ad valorem tax for it. The value of the property does not necessarily equate to the value of transit service to that area. And we're putting too many things on our property tax. It's the worst tax to load up. And here's one more step in that direction.
Senator Dibble.
Sorry, I was a little distracted. Are we talking about?
Actually, no, I haven't started that. I haven't gotten to ask that question yet.
All right.
So
I'll respond when Senator Fischbach. Okay, Senator Fischbach.
Okay, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if someone could explain that language on 24.28. It looks to me as though we're expanding the metro area transit tax into allowing those folks to tax for operating. It's on page 24, lines 28 through 31. And so I'm just, that looks like an expansion of that.
Mr. Chair.
And so, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble's going to answer that one.
Senator Dibble. That's a, Senator Fischbach has got a sharp eye and is astute. That's exactly what's happening. It sunsets. It's just for this coming biennium. And it simply allows the flexibility of the dollars that we levy for capital presently in the metropolitan area within the transit taxing district, unless we expand it, to be flexed for operating purposes on just a two-year basis.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Dibble can answer this. Okay, the sunset says this section is effective for taxes levied 09, 10, 10 and 11, and payable in 10 and 11. So does this entire metro area transit tax then sunset? Because if it's this section is effective for tax, I'm assuming they are referring to the entire section 17, and maybe I shouldn't have pointed that out.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach.
Senator Murphy.
Section 18 is the expansion of the district. This is just applies to what we're doing for the next biennium.
Oh, and Mr. Chair, no, I understand what we're talking about is the expansion of that tax, but the effective date on this tax, the way that Senator Dibble explained it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you explained that this the tax sunsets. Mm-hmm. But according to your language here, the entire section sunsets.
Well, Mr. Chair, Dibble. Thank you. The intent is for the flexibility only to sunset. And it's not an expansion. It's simply allowing the existing levy to be made flexible for the use of operating. But I'll ask council to help me understand if we got it right.
It doesn't eliminate the tax after that time.
Yeah, I'm hoping it doesn't eliminate the tax for capital purposes after that time.
Ms. Berezovsky.
I see Ms. Berezovsky shaking her head. So.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble and Senator Fischbach, the effective date, the sunset refers, and effective date refers just to the new language. That's the section that it's referring to. The rest of Subdivision 1 of 473, 446 is already in law, and it already is effective. So the only thing that would go away after the biennium after the sunset is the new language.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, this will not increase. That does not allow them to levy beyond what we are already levying on. Just use it for different purposes.
Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble.
Yes. The answer to Senator Fischbach is yes. There should be no increase to the levy, just simply making the existing levy flexible for capital or operating in whatever proportion or amounts that the Met Council determines it needs.
Mr. Chair. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to hear you say that again. This is not... this is not an increase to cover the operating deficit.
Senator Dibble, thank you. Yes, Senator Olson, not an increase to cover the operating deficit.
Oh, thank you.
Senator Dave.
Mr. Chairman, due to the fact they have a $45 million deficit now in transit, you're never going to see the sunset, Senator Fischbach. So, and in the taxing is up here and we live out there, probably just let them go at it, and people can ride for nothing. Who cares?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
It's like a $63 million deficit.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. I missed that.
Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Day, I hope you would be concerned about some of the cities in the seven-county metro area. And I know you are. I know you're here. Well, okay.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, no. We have $900 million on light rail, another $900 million on the Central Corridor. I have no compassion at all. I don't. Because I, as I told you before, I believe an $800 million bus system would be the finest bus system in the world. And the transit people are, I mean, it's just, personally, it's out of control. So I've lost my compassion. So you're up here, you weigh in and do what you can do.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Day, I was fortunate enough to encourage the Economic Development Committee to come out to Carver County, to Western Carver County, to see what's happening there. And Senators Kielash and Senator Dibble and others were present to see what's happening in those little cities along the border of Carver County. They would be included in this taxing district. The city of Hamburg with its 600 folks and the city of Mayer and New Germany, Norwood Young America, they're all suffering from economic development because they can't participate in Job Z. As it is, they're struggling for jobs. The businesses are all closing. And what this would do, if I understand correctly, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, this would include them in this taxing district, but they'll never see transit in Hamburg and New Germany and Mayer. That's not going to get there. And so to the extent that this would add a tax to communities that will never see a benefit, that leaves them 20 miles stranded away from any park and ride, seems inappropriate to me. If that's the intention here, I disagree. But Senator Murphy, this is your bill. Can you explain to me what happens to cities like Hamburg and New Germany? Do they have to participate in this tax now?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, if they're in the seven-county metropolitan area, they would participate.
Senator Day, Ortman. I hope for your support and opposition. I hope you'll help me and oppose this. There are communities in the seven-county metro area that will suffer significantly because of a program like this. I mean, there are many things to oppose about in this bill, but I hope you'll join forces with me in concern for some of those small communities that will never see assistance with transit, but will have to pay for all the transit in the seven-county metro area that will never benefit them.
Mr. Chair. Senator Jungbauer.
Where was I going when we started that conversation? I guess I lost my train of thought on there other than to say, could somebody maybe provide me with a list of any tax that had a sunset that actually sunsetted so that I understand how these sunset taxes might work? Because I know most of the taxes we're paying today were supposed to have a sunset on them, and they got continued on.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's also an assumption that the folks that live in Hamburg and Mayer and so on are all running to Minneapolis to work. Many of them are working in Carver County, and they provide their own transportation, and yet they're going to pay for something that they absolutely have no need for and no use.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Art.
On that point, most people at that point on Highway 7 or Highway 212 out there drive west, not east. It'll never help them get to Hutchinson or Glencoe where they work or to the hospital in Waconia where they work. So I think we should recognize that this is an expansion, that it will hurt communities in Minnesota by doing this. There was a reason why Carver and Scott County opted out of the CTIB program. This is why, because transit will never reach most of the communities in these counties. Never. Not in the next 20 years, probably not in the next 50 years. So that's why, and this is a pretty self-serving proposal here on the part of the larger cities in the inner city and the and transit folks. Pretty self-serving to ask those folks to pay if you saw the struggles that they have just to keep their communities together and to deal with the poverty, the unemployment in those communities. You wouldn't want to propose that tax, Senator Murphy. I don't believe you would. And so I would invite you to come out to Hamburg and Mayer and New Germany and see what those communities are like and see if after that you still want to apply this new tax to them.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, I would say that why don't you get in the helicopter some morning with me and we'll fly around the metropolitan area to all the park and rides and you can see how far people are walking to get on the bus once they park in the park and ride. that is full.
Senator Rodman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I live in Chanhassen. We have park and rides there. We have them in Chaska. I've seen the lines. I understand what you're talking about. I commute to Minneapolis or I commute to St. Paul every day. I understand about congestion. I don't need to rent a helicopter to find that out. I think I live through it every morning and every evening when it takes me an hour and a half to 2 hours to get home. I understand. But I think that you should be a little bit more compassionate with the people that are going to have to pay this tax and the burden that you're imposing on them. And so, again, I encourage you to come visit some of these communities that you think should pay a tax to pay for transit in the Twin Cities.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I hadn't intended to enter into the conversation, but I couldn't resist because I think that in the Transportation Committee, more than any other committee that I serve on, it is not a partisan issue, but it's a regional issue. And so we all bring our self-interest based on where we happen to live and how the policy is affecting the people in our community as they've elected us to do so. So I think each of us does the exact appropriate thing that we ought to as we sit at this table. But, you know, as in a family, you know, we are in a greater community, and we in the metro area often are resentful of the amount of taxes that are collected in our community in the transportation system that go out state. But we don't sit at this table and go, you can't have my money. I want to know an accounting of how much gets raised here and where it goes, because, you know, we are elected to make sure this entire state works, and we have established a vision for transit, multimodal comprehensive transit system throughout our state, and we're just beginning to have the resources to make that happen. We're doing well in some areas. We have a lot of growth potential in others. You know, it is my vision, Senator Ortman, that if we take the existing railroad tracks that are being used for freight, which do go out to your community, and work in partnership with those freight companies and with the traditional railroads, that we could expand and have commuter rail to every part of this state. And you may not want it. I'm looking at your, you know, but who knows what's possible? And that's why I've continued to advocate for this line that is now called the Little Crow Corridor that will ultimately go out to Willmar, you know, if this got passed and beyond. And so I would just say that everybody does their fair share, and we're all doing our best, but we keep our vision in mind as we evaluate policy. And the vision is that we have a multimodal, top-notch transportation and transit system that keeps Minnesota competitive, not just in our country, but in the global marketplace.
Senator Rodman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, with all due respect, it's not a shared vision. So please don't assume that all Minnesotans share in that vision. Many of them are very concerned about it and are very concerned about the new taxes that they're already paying for the funds that you say we're just now getting for transportation. They're concerned about the new gas taxes they pay, the new license tab taxes that they pay, the new sales taxes that they pay. And now you're asking them to pay more, even though we have this huge influx of new money in transportation. You're saying it's not enough. I'm sorry, the vision is not shared, Senator Bonhoff. What might be good for you and your community is not good for me and my community, and I think expressing that also is in the interests of the entire state, and that's why I express it. I'm concerned about the vision for the state of Minnesota, but the economic concerns on my part, looking at the interests of the entire state, way outweigh this little tax.
Well, Mr. Chairman and
Senator Murphy.
I think Senator Ortman might have hit the nail on the head there when she said this little tax. And what this proposal would mean would mean $25 on somebody's property taxes a year outside of the district. And it would be a decrease of $4 a year inside the district. So,
Senator Saltzman.
So just maybe to wrap this up, Mr. Chair, perhaps is that when we sit on this committee, I think Senator Bonhoff was right, is that we look throughout the state. And in my community, we've had some improvements. I don't have a lot of state highways in my district. I have 94 and 494, which there have been some improvements on. But, you know, in Scott and Carver County, there have been very major road improvements. 212 was a major project. And my constituents probably don't go that way. But I think that we all share in that we want, whether it's a transit, whether it's a road improvement, that we have to look at that. And if we all come to the table and always look about, you know, where is my little corner of the state? I know that we all advocate for our, you know, our projects and our communities to make people aware of them. But to say, if I'm not going to benefit from that, then I don't want it, we're never going to get anything passed here. And I think that in some areas in transit, when you look at where my community was 10 years ago and where it is today, it's because we are building out. We are, and people want to go to work, and this is where the jobs are. So I just think that if we can look at these things, and some projects happen in somebody's community, it may be a transit project, it may be a very major road improvement. I've seen improvements on 169. I've seen improvements on 212. I've seen, you know, improvements in some areas that my community might say, you know, I don't use those, but we do benefit from others. So I just share that, and I think that if we can have that balance, it's important.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment from me about this. A little tax here, a little tax there, a little tax here, a little more there, turns into a pretty big burden on Minnesotans. And I am looking out for the entire state when I say the burden on the taxpayers is too much. Look at the economy. We're losing jobs. People they're losing their homes. And you people want to keep adding a little bit more and a little bit there, a little bit more, a little bit there. How are these families and these taxpayers supposed to pay your unending bills to them for your vision of this state? Will you please think about that? I am looking out for the entire interests of the entire state when I say there comes a point when the taxpayers can't provide any more from their pockets for your vision.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Murphy, I think you alluded to this, but if I remember right, part of the other problem was if we expand the taxing district, which I am adamantly against, Met Council has to change the whole levy issue because it doesn't add any more money into their pockets just by expanding the taxing district. Is that not correct? They only levy up to a certain amount, and so they really, it just changes the amount that gets levied against each property and doesn't change the amount they get in, if I remember right. Is there somebody that can answer that question for me?
I didn't get the question if it was directed to me.
Senator Jungbauer, could you clarify and ask your question again?
The way Met Council works is they levy for a certain amount, just like a county levies a tax to fulfill their budget. And I believe that as the council sets the budget, if we expand the taxing district, it doesn't necessarily give them any more money. It just shares the burden over more people, and more people would pay less, so it doesn't help them out of this position because they would have to actually increase their levy in order to get more money. But that's the budget is set by the council, so you base your levy on the budget just like a county or a city does on their taxes. So I don't think this helps them at all anyway.
Yeah. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbauer, my understanding is that you are correct that what the provision that's in this bill does is just to expand the taxing district. It doesn't increase the levy authority for the council. So it would be the same, presumably the same tax collected, but from a larger base. The levy authority is set by the legislature.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, based on this provision, this does zero zip nada except shift the burden around, and I think we see more than enough shifting on what's going on. And again, when you're ready, I will certainly make the motion to remove this section. I don't know if you were ready to do that today, or are we just discussing this bill today?
Senator Murphy.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Senator Jungbauer.
I don't know that we had a question there, correct?
Senator Murphy, are we just discussing this building today, or would it be bill today, or would it be appropriate to make a motion to remove Section 18 at this point in time?
Well, Senator Jungbauer, a motion is in order anytime. I did told the committee when we started that we were going to mark the bill up on Tuesday, but if you want to make a motion, that's fine.
Well, we want to get ahead of the curve, so I'd be happy to make that motion. And
guess what's going to happen to us?
Might have another chance on Tuesday. Okay. Okay, I will withdraw that. We'll wait till Tuesday. And
okay.
Thank you, Senator.
But I think Senator Murphy knows where we're headed with this section, since we've effectively proved that not only it does nothing, but it is just a shift.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator Young.
Mr. Chair.
You know, we can just have different opinions about
Senator
things
Rest.
Without saying it does nothing.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest, it's good cause for a discussion if it actually increased the budget to help something solve that, then that'd be a great discussion. But since it doesn't change the levy authority and therefore changes no amounts of money that Met Council gets, it doesn't solve any problem, and it shifts the burden across a wider area.
Mr. Chair.
I think we have enough accounting shifts that are just going to be proposed this year that I don't like to see that. Yes, yes, our governor as well.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I think we've had a. I'll save my speeches for Tuesday, but I would just say I disagree with Senator Jungbauer's perspective.
Senator Day.
And Mr. Chairman, I think the metropolitan area, it's amazing to me what's happening, and the people in the metropolitan area are buying into it. I think there's a lot of communities that are going to lose their bus service. Their bus service, which is just a block or two from them, so I don't know how they're going to get to the trains. But 96% of the people in the state of Minnesota maneuver around in their cars, and we keep talking. We have 101,000 cars out in Jungbauer's area, and he's having a hard time to get a few dollars. We're having 30,000 people ride on a train a day. There's 101,000 cars. We got people that are proposing a train to go to Wilmer. For 20 years I've been here, and they've been wanting a four-lane highway to go to Wilmer. We talk about we're $63 million in the hole on transit. Fix it. If we got to fix it, we'll donate the money or whatever, but to just keep taxing people and say, oh, we're going to pay for the operating costs when we don't even take tickets on a train to get a ride to the ball game with the highest ridership at noon hour. The lowest ridership in the morning didn't help congestion. Now we're going to build one and the other. It's the metropolitan people. We used to be roads and trying to move people around. We got people. We got still got four-lane beltways we haven't fixed. In Senator Bonhoff's area, the greatest thing that could help her district would be go to the six lanes, like they got the big bottleneck up there. It took us a while to finally loosen up and get a little bit going on, and we're all hung up on trains. I don't understand it, and high-speed rail, and it's to me, but that's why I'm saying I'm out of this taxing district, and I'm glad I'm out of it, because it somewhere down the line, somebody's going to say, well, how much money can you actually put into these projects? What are you getting back? How many people are riding a day if you put in a quarter for $900 million?
Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, do you think we'd have a little bit more fun if I brought in my son's Thomas the Tank Engine set on Tuesday?
Nice job.
We could put the tracks all around the table and hand out Edward and Thomas and just want to lighten up things a little bit, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Thank you. Senator Bonham.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, we always have fun in transportation, but let the record reflect that Senator Day is correct. The most important thing that could be done for my district would be to widen the section of 494 where it is just north of 394 up to the Fish Lake Interchange. I have met with MnDOT many times. I have met with my cities, with the county people, and he is absolutely right, and so I will continue to be quite clear that that is something that has to be done, and I was disappointed that it didn't make the stimulus cut because it wasn't shovel-ready. It was hard to understand why it wasn't shovel-ready, given it's been on the drawing board year after year after year. I would have thought it was shovel-ready, but I didn't want to lose the opportunity to make a pitch for this project, given I was set up so perfectly. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad of that because she's absolutely right. I can't believe that it isn't shovel-ready. I can't believe after all these years that that little bit is just sitting there when they come all the way up to it. So I'm totally supportive of that deal. I don't understand that.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
Well, I think people have a good flavor for what the bill is, so I'd move to put it on the table, and I'll see you all on Tuesday. Get out of here while the getting's good.
We have a question from Senator Artman yet.
No, I'll pass.
Any other questions? Ms. Berezovsky says there's still the final item on the bill to cover.
Sorry. Members, yeah. And that's my fault. I'm sorry. There is... And Section 24, members, is a repealer, and that repealer was going to get carried in tax committee, but I wanted to make sure that folks knew what was going to happen here, and that repealer repeals that low-income tax credit, part of the 152 bill was a credit for low-income folks, and it... Well, everybody pays their gas tax for a reason, and that reason is to fix our roads. This is more of a bookkeeping thing. It's a small portion of money. It's like $50 million a biennium. Is that Ms. Boyd?
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, the estimate on the sales tax or the tax credit?
Right.
That's about $30 million a year.
$30 million a year, so $60 million for the biennium. And that's part of the bill, members.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, on page 15, and lines 3 and 4, there's an earmark here for a culvert and bridge repair, and I'm just wondering if you could potentially, it appears as though it's the only program of or earmark of that type, and I'm wondering if possibly you could explain that to me and what's going on with this project, the $1.5 million.
Mr. Chairman and members, there's District 2 has some issues up there, and one that was very clear that was brought to our committee in regards to some bridge and culvert repair, and this is going to help that district up there take care of those emergencies. This is not for, just go out and pick out a culvert and say, oh, well, we're going to change that one out. This is for emergency work. And that authorization is just above what that district would normally get. We figured it was fair. We don't want roads falling into the creek.
Senator Kelesh.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, on Section 21, you've got the Met Council may not increase fares for 2 years following the enactment of this. Is that a couple of things? Number one, it seems to tie their hands as things develop in the next 2 years. And number two, it seems like if they want to raise fares, they better do it right away before this is enacted. So could you just give me what the goal of this particular section is?
Well, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kelesh, it's my understanding, talking with Senator Dibble, that using the rest of the bill the way that we are, we're hopeful that that council won't need to increase those fares to cover their operating costs. And I think Senator Dibble knows a little more about how the numbers line up in the bill according to what their forecast is at the Met Council. And Senator Dibble conveyed to me that Mr. he Chair. Felt fairly comfortable that probably wouldn't need to increase fares. But I can let Senator Dibble speak on that.
Senator Dibble, we want to provide an answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy is correct. I think, you know, we get pretty close to solving most, if not all, of Metro Transit's problem within this bill, number one. Number two, Met Council enacted a kind of a 75-cent fare increase but only put 25 cents into effect last year, and the, you know, 50 cents keeps getting held out there as some sort of a threat. A 75-cent fare increase over the $1.50 that was the base fare, it's a 50% fare increase for working people at a time that they can at least afford it. You know, if we ask, you know, people who are just driving around in their cars to start paying immediately 50% more for their transportation needs, you know, we wouldn't be able to fit all the people in this room who would be in revolt, or even on this entire Capitol campus. The fact of the matter is that it would only end up raising for them, you know, $5 or $7 million anyways. So given that, you know, they kind of and they kind of reserve to themselves the right to just do that any time without any prior warning, or they keep telling us, oh, we'll have hearings and the like, but they keep reminding us that they don't have to, they can just do this. And so this just recognizes that we've gone pretty far to solve the problem, and we, you know, and we're trying to remove that threat that we keep getting reminded of. And Mr. Chair, we have to keep in mind that the Metro Transit, this metropolitan area, we recapture, if you will, fares account for a far greater proportion of the operating dollars for our transit system than almost every other metropolitan area. We're in the very top tier of that. So fares carry a great deal more of their freight than they do in most other metropolitan areas already.
Senator Jungbauer, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, back to line 15.3 and 15.4 with what Senator Fischbach was talking about in terms of an earmark. And we're all cognizant on if it's an emergency, I think we can all go there, but I think we're going to need some pretty specific details so that if we have these same similar emergencies, we're going to ask for the same kind of consideration for our districts. And, you know, having been a mayor before the Senate, it's somewhat of a variance. We don't put in specific amounts of money for specific areas or things as a tradition. And so we're really setting a precedent. And if we're setting it in a way that doesn't open the floodgates, I'll be right there with you. But I think we want to be very specific about what are these emergencies and what sets this apart from other potential emergencies around the other districts. So if we could get those details for sure by Tuesday before would be nice so we can understand it.
Mr. Senator Chairman Murphy. And Senator Jungbauer and members, I don't look at this authority as being an earmark per se. I think that when the public talks about earmarks, they talk about projects that are frivolous. This certainly is not, and I'm sure that that if Mr. Peterson could have the district engineer up in District 2 or someone give you a call and maybe quell some of your concerns, but my understanding is that, the reason I put this in the bill is my understanding is this is more of an emergency situation. And, you know, all of our districts are fairly strapped with cash right now. And I know that in those areas where we have growing populations and aging infrastructure, that those pressures are even higher. And I think that District 2 is probably experiencing a little more of the aging infrastructure than they are in the population explosion, but their resources are still spread paper thin, much like all the other districts. Like I said, I wouldn't have thrown this in the bill if I didn't think that it was going to get rectified either through the bonding bill or through other means. I'm not trying to be nefarious. I'm not trying to set a standard. I'm just saying that, you know, the pretty tough times for our districts out there, and we can't have major thoroughfares not operating to their optimum. And if this condition continues to degrade, in the one specific example that I'm thinking of, they're not going to be able to use that road. So, and we want to keep that road open.
Senator Junglar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Murphy, I'll be very clear that I personally don't have a problem with the earmark. I have a problem with pork, and I'm not saying this is pork. So when people distinguish those things, very clearly the 35W bridge was an earmark, and it was a very necessary earmark. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with that. I want to be certain that when we veer from tradition, if you will, or what we've done in the past, and I think even to some degree maybe we ought to head that way, because as we give a budget to each district, and when they have a major problem, if that doesn't give enough money in that budget for certain emergency problems, I think we may end up in the future starting to earmark some of these projects to move them ahead because of the way MnDOT does things and the way budgeting works. But again, I want to be clear that we want to all know, I think we all need to know, how are we going about with this kind of precedent-setting thing so that we can be sure we're on a good, solid ground as we move forward.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy. Senator?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion to lay the bill on the table as amended.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate file 1276 as amended be laid on the table. From which time? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Laid on the table.
Okay.
With that, the Transportation Committee is adjourned.
That was bad.